Near-Death Experience Podcast, an ongoing exploration of spiritually transformative experiences, including NDEs and other phenomena, in order to elucidate the ineffable and better understand our spirituality. All episodes are available at ndepodcast.org. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and guests are not necessarily those of NDE Podcast, the NDERF, any sponsors, or for that matter, anyone else. In the end, the only opinion that really matters is yours. Near-Death Experience Podcast, item number 384, March 17th, 2022. The NDE of Tammy H.
Welcome to Near-Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World, What Near-Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side, as well as the music album Home, both of which can be found on our website, neardeathexperiencepodcast.org or ndepodcast.org. Today we're going to share the experience of Tammy from nderf.org, the Near Death Experience Research Foundation website. Now, Tammy doesn't give the medical background toward the beginning of her experience, but I checked the bottom, questionnaire, and so forth, and she is coming out of general anesthesia after surgery, and this took place in 2015. So Tammy says, "During my near-death experience, I had both negative and positive visions. I also had a life review, as well as the ability to see future events in my life. Numbers played an important factor in my NDE. To start, I was standing on what resembled a number line. I was standing at a perfect zero in physical form on this number line. I could see my entire body in physical form. The right side of the number line had a bluish color. The left side had a reddish color. My attire was the same as when I had went in for surgery. I was wearing a black skirt, white sleeveless shirt with black roses on it. I saw a soul-like variation of myself standing directly across from where I was standing in physical form. From the waist up, I saw the soul-like variation of myself wearing the same attire as the physical form of me. The soul-like variation of myself was surrounded by a fluorescent bluish-whitish color light. A red question mark was above the middle of my forehead. On each side, the number line extended to the number 104 on both sides. I saw the number 104 burning in flames to the left of me. The numbers 72 and 22 were lit up to the right of me. Those were the only numbers I had seen so vividly. Those three numbers had stood out more than any of the other numbers. I didn't see any symbols on the left side. I experienced smells of burning flesh and hair while looking towards the left of the number line during my life review. There was a door that was a grayish-black color. It was very squeaky and needed some WD-40 lubricant. The door appeared to be very heavy in weight. Out of the door came two soul-like figures that were literally burning alive. This was my soon-to-be ex-husband and his father, burning alive right before my eyes. Seeing them standing to the left of me at a 45-degree angle, they were screaming in pain, regret, and remorse, and it was so hard for me to grasp. With each flame that arose, more and more regret, anger, remorse, and rage consumed their souls. Then came my life review, which was also done on the same side as their burning souls. A complete life review on the left side of how I treated others was quite overwhelming. In that moment, the speed of my life was flashing before me, a speed that is immeasurable on Earth. By comparison, the speed was much faster than watching a DVD being rewound on the fastest speed. Seeing the pain and agony of how poorly I had treated people was a shock at all levels. Seeing the lies that I told, the cheating and stealing, was shown so vividly. I saw my drug-using days and the vast amount of disrespect I had for people, even those whom I professed to love. My mother was one of the biggest victims of my disrespect prior to my NDE. It was as if we were watching a rewound version of my life while wearing 3D glasses. During the life review, I felt heat that was so very intense, and more intense than any inferno. My wrongdoings, sins, were measured in sync and severity with the heat. Once adultery was shown, the heat became even more intense. Lying caused the heat to intensify as much as the adultery. Based on the temperature of the heat, the message instantly revealed was that I needed to be truthful in all of my actions. It also revealed telepathically to not be so aggressive. A divine telepathic communication that was telling me to be more loving and open my heart. After my life review, there was a brief minute of darkness. Directly following that brief screen of darkness, I was now at the right side of the number line. There was a divine presence of positive energy, as well as telepathic communication from the divine while on the right side. I would have to classify the right side as the high-definition side. Emotions really seemed to manifest themselves within me while on this side. Practicality seemed to dissipate, allowing more heartfelt love to flow into me. The love was overwhelming, unadulterated bliss that had consumed my soul, unlike anything I had ever felt before. I felt a sense of peace and content as I was gazing at the intensely bright light. On this side, there was no fear, heat, or foul smells. Negativity was non-existent on this side because of so much positive energy. Love was a more prominent emotion, unlike fear on the left side. Through a smoky beam of bluish-white light, I did see what resembled a word globe-looking symbol in a brassy gold color. There were some squiggly lines with three letters accompanying the globe-like symbol. Due to the light being so bright, I could only make out one of the letters, in which looked like a crooked M. I had experienced communication with a deceased little girl, of whom later revealed to be my daughter. I was given the opportunity to converse with this little girl about making changes. While staring at her features in my near-death experience, I saw so much of myself in her. She had long black hair and beautiful dark brown eyes. Her complexion was so beautiful, and I saw my features. She had her father's eyes and was probably close to 5 years old. Immediately and instinctively, I knew who she was before even asking. I was in awe of the similarity in features and asked, "Are you?" Before I could finish the sentence, she said, "Yes, Mommy, I'm your daughter." By her physical appearance and age range, I knew this had to be true. She says, "Mommy, why couldn't you keep me?" I said, "Baby, Mommy had what was called an abortion." I said, "There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about you. Mommy is so sorry. And I was married to another man, and your daddy was married to another woman." I asked, "Do you forgive me?" She says, "Yes, Mommy. It's okay, Mommy, but you have to change. Mommy, you have to stop being mean to people." Standing beside her was a tall, handsome man, wearing an aqua ice blue dress shirt. He He was standing at a 45-degree angle under the word globe sign that I described earlier. In his hands was a device that was as big as a cell phone by comparison. I had never seen anyone whom fits his description prior to my NDE. In that moment, I thought of him as a mystery man, and was literally able to feel his energy. He radiated such a positive vibe and a feeling of belonging. It felt as if I had seen him in a past spiritual realm at one time, or was going to encounter his presence. We never verbally spoke. We telepathically communicated with each other in my near-death experience. I could see into his soul, almost as if he was just as captivated by me as I was him. I stared up at this tall man, and my heart fluttered for the first time ever. There were visions of us riding on a bus together and laughing. These visions flashed before my eyes, just as my life review did, while on the left side. Nearby scenery revealed white birds in a lake while the bus was in motion. He had complete adoration for me while holding his electronic device. A feeling of adoration and unadulterated shock ran through my system as I stared intently at the glow around him. There were two buttons on this device, a red button on the left in which there were a few squiggly lines. However, the lines didn't seem to form any words. A blue button was on the right of this device, measuring significantly larger than the red button on the left. The words, "Send back," were written in bold black letters just below the blue button. My daughter and I had a conversation, and she told me that I needed to change. She and I discussed the changes that I needed to make. All of the changes had encompassed around what was shown to me in the life review. I needed to change my aggression and not be so negative. My daughter forewarned me to stop cheating when I find love again. She reminded me to be honest, true, and sincere in my actions, and not to be such a dominant female. She said, "Stop being cold and mean, Mommy." I also received a telepathic message from God that reminded me to get baptized again. Telepathically, the message communicated was, "Go and find the rivers of belief." Before I could be sent back, I was asked by my daughter if I would agree to making these changes. She said, "Mommy, if you say you will change, we can send you back." I had agreed to those changes by telling her, "Yes." I also telepathically communicated with God by mentally responding, "Yes, I will commit to making changes." The energy on the other side was so intense. Then I felt like there was an electricity running through my veins at the earthly level. There was a love so strong, with such a magnetic pull, that it drew me to the light more and more. Upon telepathic communication with the divine, I felt immeasurable positive energy ingrained in my soul. A slight portion of that energy remained with me during my journey back to Earth. Just before I was sent back, parts of Ozzy Osbourne's song, "You See on the Other Side," was playing as I began waking from my near-death experience. The exact four lines were, "But we'll be together, carved in stone, carved in stone, carved in stone." I distinctly remember my last thought being, "I need to find this mystery man upon returning to Earth." Visions of us becoming romantic were not tangibly seen in my near-death experience, but only intuitively felt. I was able to feel his embrace without actually embracing him. Just looking up at him had me beyond the scope of captivated. A complete and utter feeling of warmth and love consumed my soul. In that moment, it was unlike anything I had ever felt. By comparison, it was a love stronger than death. I knew immediately that seeing him in my NDE was an indication of some sort. I was convinced that God was trying to tell and or show me something by him being in my near-death experience. However, during my NDE, I couldn't figure out the entire message. I did get a feeling as if we were going to end up together romantically at some point. All that came to mind telepathically from God was, "Go find him, Tammy." Visions of him in the aqua ice-colored shirt, plus his overall physical appearance, began to change. During the changing of his physical appearance and his shirt colors, I felt a sense of loss within me. It felt almost as if I could sense him becoming ill, which would end our contact on Earth. Suddenly, a transformative vision of him came into play. He had changed from wearing an aqua-iced blue shirt to wearing a white shirt with a burgundy-colored tie. I had briefly seen a quick camera-like flash of myself in a wedding gown standing beside him. We were standing at a bus stop that was adjacent to what resembled a courthouse building. However, this vision of him had revealed a much younger physique. Although he was dressed in different attire and a younger physique, he still felt like the same mystery man. Spiritually, it was as if the connection never died. His new physique resembled darker eyes and a beard, with his height remaining the same. Perhaps maybe this was a sign of reincarnation, and that we would find each other again no matter what. I truthfully do not know. What I do know is the soul feeling was the same. All visions faded, and I had entered reality. Reality meaning I was literally able to feel my soul reuniting with my physical body. At the earthly level, I was feeling a sense of enlightenment and fully awakening at a different level. I woke up in the hospital and was literally sweating in the recovery room. My nightgown had disappeared, and I complained to the nurses about the heat being so intense. I had asked, "Where's my purple nightgown?" The nurse told me, "You took it off." I said, "I did?" She said, "Yes, ma'am, and we tried to put a thinner cotton one on you too, and you fought us." I kept repeating, "The heat, it is so intense. It is so intense. I am alive. I am alive." I called my soon-to-be ex-father-in-law to give him an update hours later. I had discussed with him what I saw. He said in a very serious tone, "It sounds like you had a near-death experience." I was in a complete state of shock and denial. Confusion was very well accompanying the shock and denial. Over the phone, I described the man in my NDE to my soon-to-be ex-father-in-law. He was insistent that I had a near-death experience and had been given the opportunity to see into my future. I was beside myself, still being able to feel this mystery man's energy. This energy was so prominent and couldn't be ignored. Later that evening, I snapped a few pictures of me and made a few quick videos with my cell phone. I had taken some paper and a pen with me in case I needed to write down any important surgery information. Hours later, I had wrote a brief outline of the visions I had seen. The next day, making a video before being released from the hospital became a priority. I thought to myself, a video needs to be made in the event we find our way to each other through fate. Without knowing his name, I referred to him as Baby in the video. Upon returning home, I prayed constantly to find this mystery man. I spent various evenings wondering who he was and questioning why I saw him. I eventually moved to a new apartment by a lake. The complex I moved to was in a bad area, yet I still had the desire to move there. However, something kept gnawing at me, indicating there was a deeper reason behind moving there. Nonetheless, moving there had sealed my fate. fate had led me to my NDE mystery man, John, just under a year later. We had met on a bus a few months after my NDE on April 6th, 2016. I recognized him immediately and was in a state of shock the morning he stepped on the bus. All of the scenery on the bus was exactly what I had seen in my NDE. His shirt had the same squiggly lines and word globe signal that was seen in my NDE. We started out talking periodically on the bus, with just general everyday conversation. There was always such a bright glow around him, especially when he would wink at me. Around the August of 2016 time frame, we formally introduced ourselves to each other by shaking hands. Just the touch of his hand made me weak in the knees. Energy surges ran through my body, leaving me rendering still. I went home and said to myself, "This is without a doubt unbelievable. I have met the mystery man." As I touched his hand, that same energy resurfaced itself from my NDE. The following month, we hugged on September 2nd. On that day, he was wearing the same exact colored aqua iced blue dress shirt as in my NDE. We exchanged email addresses and things began to take off at that point. I sent him the first email on October 3rd, 2016, and was captivated where our conversation went. Ironically enough, he had typed in an email. "Looks like we just wrote our first script for next Friday night." Well, the first scene, of course. His use of the word script made me think to myself that when the time is right, I will show you the video. All that ran through my mind was the original outline I had wrote while in Chesapeake on July 24, 2015. In that moment, while conversing, it felt as if we had known each other for centuries. Time stood still, leaving my body to shake with genuine warmth. Warmth that had permeated through every vein. Several months went by. We had our ups and our downs. Overall, a connection so deep that cannot be diffused. Having the ability to read each other's minds and feel each other is indescribable, even to this day. And that is the end of Tammy's experience. And first off, I have to apologize to all you fellow hopeless romantics like myself out there that are wondering, well, did Tammy and him get together? Did they marry? Did something happen? She doesn't say, which suggests to me that it may still be a relationship in progress. I mean, this was not a long time ago, only a few years ago, that this took place. And the last dates that she gave were 2016, was the when they emailed for the first time. And it sounds like they were taking it very slow. I mean, their first handshake was a while after meeting, and then a month later was their first hug. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe they're still together, maybe not. I wish I knew. But what a beautifully romantic near-death experience, isn't it? And yet, it has some very challenging starts. I mean, let's just get into this a little bit. Tammy is seeing herself. First off, very interesting situation with numbers here. I hear of numbers and math coming up in near-death experiences, which for those who are not very familiar with near-death experiences or have not heard a lot of experiences, you're likely to go, what? Why are there numbers? And why is there this aspect of math to the experience? But to those who have followed the podcast for a long time or read a lot of near-death experiences, you'll find that a familiar pattern, one that doesn't come up super often, but it's often enough that there is definitely something to numbers and math on the other side. And it seems to link to this eternal oneness, this source energy and everything, and love and all of that. There seems to be math about it, which is so interesting. As someone who struggled with math in school and was always saying, oh, I'm an English guy. At least by college I was, you know, I was a creative. I was somebody who was more into the more creative, you know, side of things. And math was the opposite side of things. But we're seeing this in a very different light in near-death experiences. In this context, numbers seem to somehow encompass both love and eternity and these the symbology that just runs so deeply and weaves itself through everything and anything that they encounter. And in this case, Tammy's situation, she actually sees physical numbers on fire on one side, in flames, the number 104. Now, what is 104? I don't know. My first thought is it was a divisible by 72, and then I'm like, wait, no, but it's not. That would be 142, and 104 is not really related to 72 that I know of, and 22, I mean, the only thing I can see is twos and fours showing up a lot, but then you've got the one and zero that don't seem to coordinate with that. So what's going on here? I don't know. Is there some connection between these numbers? Again, I don't know. But it's fascinating. And she says those three numbers had stood out more than any of the other numbers, implying that there were actually other numbers that she was seeing as well, because she only mentions 104, 72, and 22. And so obviously there were lots of numbers or more numbers. She does say on each side, the number line extended to the number 104. So does that mean there were numbers going all the way up to 104, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, on each side, and then it's stopping at 104? Is this, you know, a number of months till something is to happen, or since something's happened, or years until something, you know, who knows? We just don't know. And Tammy doesn't seem to know, though she senses a deep significance about these three numbers, which is kind of cool. I mean, it's just cool. Okay, next thing, though not in a different situation, she sees this door, this grayish-black door, and it's creaky, needs some WD-40. I'm kind of picturing something big, industry-like, creaky door, and very heavy, she says. And out of the door came two soul-like figures that were literally burning alive. And when I first, you know, my first reading of this, I'm thinking to myself, because we can't help as humans to start trying to place patterns and trying to figure out what's going on here. This every near-death experience is a puzzle of itself, and we're looking for data points, and we're looking for things that we can, you know, rely on and understand and so forth. And doors are not uncommon, especially, you know, pearly gates don't seem to be very uncommon. You encounter those as crossover points to heaven or to the other side or whatever. But this is a door where there are two people coming out burning alive. And my, you know, biased self reading this is thinking, well, maybe this is, you know, something that's going on from life, you know, from Earth. And this is, you know, maybe the surgery was because there was some accident and somebody was burning and she got burned in the process too, or something like that. I don't know. And maybe she's seeing some glimpse of this. But no, she is seeing, as it goes on further, two family members who were suffering for their sins. And this is something that I have not seen at this level very often. Very, very rarely will I see something where there is literally a burning, an individual burning for wrongdoings. And then she finds herself experiencing a heat that goes way beyond an inferno, as she said. And she is very clearly understanding in this moment that it is due to her wrongdoings, her sins. She uses that word. And while I am obviously not unfamiliar with the word sins, and am very familiar in my own faith with the concept of sin, I don't see in near-death experiences many times people experiencing an actual seemingly physical suffering for their sins. There is often guilt, or there is shame, you know, maybe just sense of longing to fix the situation and so forth. It's not very often there is a genuine, I mean, this is a fire and brimstone situation. I don't see that very often in near-death experiences. But I can't claim now, having read this, and there have been others, but, you know, you wonder sometimes if they're outlier experiences, things that, you know, not many people actually experience, or that maybe, you know, there were dark evil spirits who'd, you know, stepped in and given her, you know, a ride before she discovered the light or was rescued or whatever like that. This seems to be a situation where she is placed in this situation to experience the pain of her sins, both the physical, spiritual, emotional, mental, everything. She's experiencing the pain of her sins. And then goes on, and, you know, at first you think, oh, well, you know, maybe there's something to this, you know, eternal hell thing that's going to come up in the near-death experience. But no, because the next, I don't know, scene that she finds herself in, I don't know if it's the next moment or how long she experienced that burning inferno that is the, this includes terrible shame and for all these things that she had done. And she kind of goes into some little bit of detail about what those things were, but you know, lying, cheating, adultery, you know, the traditional sins, you might say. She's feeling and experiencing them, and then the scene changes, not the scene itself, but the situation of the scene changes when she turns to the right side of the number line, which, again, this, you know, number line, the red side and the blue side, I don't remember which was which for sure, I'd have to glance over it again, the one side has this inferno for her, suffering for her sins, and the other side is suddenly this divine presence of positive energy and a telepathic communication from the divine on this right side. You know, in this right and left reflects what is very common in many religions, including my own Christian religion, this right and left, you know, being on the right hand of God and the left hand of God, you know, the right being the good positive side and the left being the negative side. The classic example of this in the Bible is the situation where Jesus is sharing the story of talking about how there would be those on his right hand and those on his left. And he would say to those on his left hand, I was a stranger and ye took me not in. I was naked and ye clothed me not. And I was in prison and ye came to visit me not. And then on the right hand, he would say, I was naked and ye clothed me. I was in prison and ye visited me. Basically, saying, you guys helped me and you guys didn't. And the ones on the left would say, when did we see you and didn't help you? And the ones on the right are saying, you know, when did we see you and help you? And he says, inasmuch as ye do it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Basically saying, when you serve your fellow beings, you serve me. So this right and left hand thing immediately, you know, made me think of my Christian background, and many other religious backgrounds have a similar thing of this right and left. And obviously you can't take the right and left to the extreme and, you know, to where you're saying, oh, lefties are of the devil, like they once said in many societies, you know, which is a terrible thing. That's taking the symbolism down to the literal and, you know, things just start falling apart. So, you know, I'm not trying to justify any of that kind of attitude, but that symbolism of the right and the left seems to be showing up in her experience. On the left, she's experiencing the pain and suffering of her sins. But on the right, she is experiencing this overwhelming, it seems to surpass any of the pain that she suffers on the left, love and absolute positive energy. She keeps using that term, positive energy. And I think part of it is because she, from her own words, was a very negative person, focusing on the negative and being a negative influence on those around her, or having this negative energy about her. And she seems to keep, because it seems to be kind of an eye-opener for her, this positive energy thing. Positive energy, positive energy. And on this right side with the positive energy, there's this little girl who she immediately recognizes as being her daughter. Not just because of the striking resemblance of her hair and her husband's eyes and all of that that her daughter has, and the age and so forth, but also because she just can feel that sense of who this is. And I can't imagine being in her shoes, because apparently this girl was aborted. She aborted this little girl. And can you imagine this? I mean, this girl comes to her and says, "Mommy, why couldn't you keep me?" As a parent who is, you know, I have broken my children's hearts many, many times, or they have broken my heart many times by my breaking theirs, you know, just because we have to go home from the playground or, you know, different things. You know, most of the time I can just put up that wall and say, "Okay, it's time to go. We are leaving." You know, you have to as a parent. But there's once in a while that just those tears get to you and it's heartbreaking, you know. And if I, as one who is, you know, giving them the appropriate consequences for their choices, or I'm calling them home because we do have dinner to get to, or just the most innocent family situations of seeing their heart broken and mine breaking far more than theirs, I know, at the time, because they bounce back so easily and so quickly as kids. But I know the feeling of, you know, my child breaking my heart in a situation. I cannot imagine what this must be like for her, to have her own little girl who she in this life rejected. And I have to be careful with my words here, because I don't want anyone out there to feel guilty. I don't want to cause any shame or anything for anyone. I don't want to do that, but I'm trying to portray what she is experiencing to some level, and seems to be experiencing, amidst this also overwhelming love and joy that she is experiencing being there. You know, she's got this little girl that she's aborted, and the girl says, "Why couldn't you keep me?" And she's trying to explain. She says, "Baby, Mommy had what was called an abortion." And she says, "There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about you." She says, "Mommy is so sorry. And I was married to another man, and your daddy was married to another woman." So it sounds like this was an out-of-wedlock pregnancy. So she's just like, "I can't, you know, have this child." And so, you know, in this situation, while maybe not being justifiable, you could say is understandable, but she is now face-to-face with the child who is the person behind that abortion, the individual who is totally separate from her and her husband, completely different individual, nothing of shame or blame could possibly be placed on this child. And she is face to face seeing this child, and the child is asking her why. And she asks her, "Do you forgive me?" And the child just, I mean, so childlike, these words, "Yes, Mommy, it's okay, Mommy, but you have to change. Mommy, you have to stop being mean to people." Wow. As a parent, I cannot picture how much emotion that would bring about. It's both beautiful, heartbreaking, and fascinating all at the same time. Okay, so the next aspect of her near-death experience is seeing the future. And she's not just seeing any future. She's seeing a man who strikes her so intensely that she's completely captivated by this man and his energy. And she describes his energy as being such a positive vibe and a feeling of belonging. And at this point, she's kind of, I gather that there, that this positive energy that is emanating from this man, and she's seeing the scene from the future that will happen, because she confirms it later, making this, again, a veridical near-death experience, so one that has some level of proof behind it, because, you know, seeing the future, I mean, that's a big deal. You know, that's something of strong evidence. But anyway, she's seeing this future scene and is overwhelmed. And I don't doubt that in this state where emotions are so, ability to be so raw, they have the ability to be completely unhampered by the mortal inhibitions, if you will. She has this feeling of adoration, and she has this, you know, shock of seeing him because of the emotions that it gives her. She talks about her heart fluttering for the first time ever, that, you know, which is interesting because clearly she's had a number of quote-unquote loves in her life, relationships that have been, you know, fully physicalized and everything, and yet in all her life she's never felt the heart flutter that she feels for this man. You know, that is so interesting and so romantic. I mean, it's beautifully put. She should write a book, and she could, you know, I mean, it's a romance and a near-death experience full of emotion. And I mean, the whole child of hers and so forth. I mean, there's so many beautiful emotional levels that Tammy really should write a book of this experience. Hopefully she has by now. Who knows? But she just can't get over this guy. And she's just, even coming back, she is absolutely, you know, she's feeling this longing to be with him. And I think it's so, I don't know how else to say it, but it's so cute that when she first sees him again, not only does she have this, this, you know, feeling come back from her near-death experience, this, you know, the flutter, the sense of shock, of sensing his positive energy. I imagine it's probably dulled down to some level just because she's mortal, but in the moment she's probably in such a state of shock, and as she says, denial, that she doesn't really know what to do with herself. I don't know if her first seeing of him, I'm trying to scan through whether she even talked to him at first. It doesn't seem to say, but she does mention that she begins talking with him at some point. She's running into him on the bus. I can imagine that she is going to take the bus regularly at this point. But anyway, my point is, or that I was trying to make, is how cute it is, how slow this relationship begins to emerge. I mean, their first interaction is just talking. And then, you know, that was April 6th, I think it's, she said, that she first meets him of 2016, April 6th. And then around August of 2016, same year, several months later, they formally introduce themselves to each other by shaking hands. That's just adorable. That's all I can say. And of course, you know, at the touch of his hand, she feels weak in the knees. She's filled with this, you know, feeling again and so forth. And she's blown away by it. And then in October of that year, it'd be a couple months later, she sends the first email. I mean, isn't that just so sweet? It's taking so long, and she is just absolutely enamored with this guy. And yet, she's moving very slowly. He's moving very slowly. She's probably worried about scaring him off. She probably knows. I mean, she's just been through this experience where she's been told, you've got to stop being so aggressive with people. You've got to stop being, you know, so negative and so forceful with people and so forth. And so she's trying to take this very carefully and slow because her aggressive nature, you know, she has to suppress that. And she probably knows that. And it could be that if she doesn't, she's going to lose him or lose the opportunity to push this further and so forth. But anyway, so, you know, they email for the first time in October. And then, you know, I love that she's given the dates here. But she says that in September, notice that that is actually before the October when they first email, but their first hug is September 2nd. And then, like I said, October, a month later, their first emailing, and they begin to correspond with each other. And that's the last we hear of it. And I don't know her relationship situation. Was she dating somebody else at the time, or, you know, with somebody else at the time, or is this the beginning of a new relationship? She's not clear on that. So I don't really have grounds to speculate beyond that, especially since this is, you know, 6 years ago. I'm sure a lot has happened in the last 6 years, and whether they ended up together or not, I don't know, but it's interesting to me that she has this sense in her near-death experience that they have known each other for centuries. They have been either together for that time or anticipating this time or something. They've known each other, and they've had this very strong sense of, you know, fate bringing them together for all this time. Just beautiful, sweet experience there. And one that I think is a valuable one because it throws a few challenges into our supposition that there is no judgment at all, and yet also leaves plenty of room for this, you know, deliverance from the hell that she seems to experience for a time, and also a second chance at life, at relationships, at, you know, just making herself into the person that she needs to be, and that God, who she communicates with during this experience with, apparently wants of her. And I find that communication with God that she has during her experience to be very interesting, because she does not describe seeing God. A couple of times she describes conversing with the divine, and other times she says that she's speaking with God in her mind. And he even says to her, go find him, Tammy. I mean, it's a very clear communication, words given to her that she can come back with and write them down. They're that literal. And she has this connection with the divine. Is it possible that all of us on the other side have that unfiltered of a connection with the divine on the other side? I can only speculate. I would suggest that possibly yes. But again, these are experiences that, you know, we keep finding things that every time I think I'm starting to get a grip on what the other side is like, or what, you know, judgment is or judgment isn't, or what love is and what love isn't, something throws not a wrench in it, but rather another dimension of it, another aspect to it that goes beyond what I understood. And how cool is that? How cool is that? I will wrap things up by saying this last point, and that is that with all of these things, both the new elements and the very familiar elements, and just all these beautiful little, you know, adorable elements in between, there seems to be an underlying foundation, an underlying basis of all of it, which comes back to that idea of love. And to the question of, well, are we talking about love of God, love of yourself, love of your child kind of love, or romantic love? What kind of love are we talking? And the answer is yes, all of the above. Love is love. And as she describes, love, as we sometimes see here, sometimes the, maybe the erotic level of love that maybe encourages us to betray relationships and you know, sacrifice the deeper loves in our life for, you know, maybe that sexual love or other kinds of intimate love that are something of a betrayal of those relationships, that those things are not truly based in love, but that the underlying concepts behind them, that longing, that need for a true, pure, loving, either romantic relationship, parental relationship, or even that relationship with the divine, there is this underlying idea, underlying need, this underlying goal, eternal ambition of love. And I find that absolutely beautiful. And with that, thank you again, all of you, for listening.
Chaz and I thank you for listening to Near Death Experience Podcast. You can reach out to your hosts by using Chaz, C-H-A-S, at ndepodcast.org and John, J-O-H-N, at ndepodcast.org. You can text or call the show at 970-633-2278. That's 970-NDE-CAST. Calling allows you to record your message in 3-minute increments. If your message runs longer than 3 minutes, just call back and we can splice the segments together. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by searching NDE Podcast on those sites. And join our Facebook NDE Podcast community. Please leave feedback for the show on iTunes or via whatever application you use to listen to us. Doing so will allow our audience to grow and help spread the knowledge about spiritually transformative experiences to more listeners. You can help keep the show financially viable by purchasing Chaz's music or his book under the store link on the ndepodcast.org website, or by going to patreon.com/ndepodcast, where you can make a one-time only donation or become an ongoing supporter. Whether you decide to write or call us, or you choose to support the show, either financially or by writing a review or by listening and sharing us with others, we are so humbly thankful for you. We can't begin to express how much touching you spiritually means to us. Chaz and I thank you for joining us. We hope you keep listening and applying the understanding you gain from the show about your existence after this earthly life, so you have a better life right now. And to love one another. This is your host, John Messer, reminding you that it's all about attitude and gratitude, and our attitude should always be love.